Last week, as they were preparing to take on this this omnibus bill, several Republicans were very upset that something wasn't happening, and that was that the Lamar Alexander, Susan Collins compromise to take care of the Affordable Care Act wasn't taken care of. One of the people in this press briefing the other day was Senator Lindsey Graham.
Well, I really miscalculated the politics of this issue. We spent an hour on the phone with the president last Saturday, Senator Alexander, myself, Collins, and Congressman Walden, and really good questions, very engaged president. And we asked him, would you please support this? And he said, okay, it makes sense to me. What do you want me to do? I want you to call Paul Ryan. I want you to call Mitch McConnell. I want you to line up Republicans. We're going to get pushback from our friends in the Freedom Caucus. He says, I'll do it. He got on the phone, and he did exactly what he said. Paul said yes. Mitch said yes. Our friends in the Freedom Caucus said no, but we got the votes on our side to win the day. And out of nowhere came this objection by our Democratic friends based on abortion language that has been in law for decades.
That is Senator Lindsey Graham the other day. Let's talk about this piece of legislation, ACA stabilization, not being part of the omnibus. What happens next? Joining us on POTUS is Sally Pipes. Sally is president of the Pacific Research Institute, tweeting at Sally Pipes. Sally, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Tim, for having me.
Do you think it's a good or a bad thing that this stabilization package did not make it into the omnibus bill?
Well, from my point of view, I think it is a good thing that it didn't. I mean, as you know, and probably most people know by now, that the funds for the cost-sharing reduction subsidies to the insurers and the reinsurance payments that ended at the end of 2016 were never included in, those funds were never appropriated by Congress. So, you know, when the CSR payments of $7 to $8 billion a year for the last few years for the subsidies, those were actually, you know, illegal. And so it was a problem. But as you mentioned, we knew that Senators Alexander, Susan Collins, also Patty Murray was involved in this earlier on in a bipartisan deal, but they didn't make it into the final omnibus bill. And actually, I am pleased with that. And it's also interesting that, Tim, just last week, the Dems, who had been supporting these bipartisan bills, decided that they felt that Obamacare was failing, and therefore they wanted to go to single payer, so they weren't supporting the bipartisan bills either.
So, all right, so great. So now Republicans have, according to Senator Alexander and Senator Collins and Senator Graham, they have a loss because they thought this would at least give them a chance to sort of have a slow fall, if you will. And if Democrats are happy, as you say, and they want to go to single payer, so what's going to happen when millions of Americans find themselves being unable to get health insurance?
Well, I think, you know, as Michael Cannon wrote last week, you know, premiums have been going up since Obamacare came into being. The exchange premiums have gone up between 18 and 25% per year. So even with the CSR payments and the reinsurance payments, so the real problem was that the people with pre-existing conditions that were expensive, the costs for those were being forced on to people who were healthy and having to subsidize these other people. So we can't, you know, we can't blame, we can't blame anyone but the insurance companies for trying to get these funds. Greg Walden, the Energy and Commerce Secretary, has said that they're going to try and bring the CSR and the reinsurance bill forward again to Congress. Whether that will happen this year with the midterm elections coming up, I really don't think so. But as I say, the premiums have been going up on the exchange plans, you know, since the beginning of Obamacare, when the first exchanges opened in the fall of 2013. So really, these payments should never have been there. And now, of course, things have changed. But we'll see whether any of the Republicans, you know, bring it forward. But I think with the midterms coming up, this is probably not going to come to the fore.
Well, so the rates are still going to go up for people.
Right.
And then the Republicans are going to be blamed for this. And what's going to happen is the backlash is going to be such that eventually people will buy into the idea of single payer.
Well, you know, as a former Canadian who grew up under single payer, and we've talked about this before, the long waiting lists, ration care, et cetera. But, you know, on the positive side, with the the rules on the short-term health care plans, the short-term insurance plans, I think that a lot of the people that didn't buy coverage because the premiums were so high on the exchanges, a lot of people, assuming the rule goes through, will actually be able to get plans that last for 364 days much cheaper, and one would hope that they will also approve them being renewable. So that's a good thing. And also the association health plans, where small businesses have had a lot of trouble, very expensive care under Obamacare, with small groups can band together under association health plans. This is going to really alleviate, you know, allowing a lot of people will get coverage under these two executive orders. And so the number of uninsured, I think, is much overstated by the Congressional Budget Office and several people on the Democratic side.
So how much do you think how many people do you think will be uninsured compared to now?
Well, right now we still have 28 million people uninsured. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that number, you know, may go down probably to, you know, they say that 200,000 at least will sign up for the short-term plans. And so maybe go down a million or two. But we really need, you know, the Republicans promised the American people they would repeal and replace Obamacare. They haven't been able to do it. And Obamacare, you know, has proved a disaster. And it's, you know, it's only covering, you know, 10 to 11 million people. We have 330 million people in this country. And so, you know, it really has not worked. The premiums have been too high. Deductibles are so high that many people that had exchange coverage couldn't use them. And then people are very upset with the small networks of doctors and hospitals that happened under their exchange plans when they found they couldn't keep the same doctor that they had before. So we need to work to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I think if the Republicans, you know, cannot get this done, you know, the midterms, by not repealing, it's going to be more difficult for Republicans in the midterm elections than it would have been if they had repealed and replaced.
Sally, the number you give, 10 million or so, you're not including the people who are on the expanded Medicaid, right, that would be captured under Obamacare, the broad umbrella, so another 20 million or so, right?
15 million are on the Medicaid expansion plan. And interestingly, mm-hmm. in California, one-third of the population of California, 13 million out of 39 million people in the state of California are on the Medicaid expansion, costing the budget and costing Californians $100 billion a year. And these people are getting upset because doctors are not taking Medicaid and Medi-Cal patients because of the low reimbursement rates. So emergency room use is up. So the Medicaid expansion, you know, has not worked out to the way that everyone thought. If you can't get a doctor or you're on a waiting list for too long, as we've seen, and in Oregon, they've shown that the Medicaid expansion people, their outcomes were no better than those people who had no insurance.
Sally Pipes with us, president of the Pacific Research Institute. Sally, what I'm hearing from you and what I keep hearing from politicians is that the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is not working. It's falling apart. And we're going to repeal and replace. Republicans have not been able to do that. And as a result of that, you've correctly stated the issue, the problem, but no solutions have been forthcoming specifically about what they could do that will pass, because quite frankly, unless you get Democrats and Republicans together, it's not going to pass. So what I wonder, if it happens, if Democrats regain the House and wind up taking, again, a majority in the Senate, they may get some kind of a compromise. Is there something in between single payer and what we have now that would get Republicans and Democrats, whether you think it's a good idea or not? Is there something that might actually happen that would make it so that people in this country won't have so much uncertainty when it comes to their health care?
Well, as you know, the exchanges will open enrollment will be on November 1st, just prior to the election. So we'll have a peek at what the premiums are probably going to be. I think, you know, there could be some legislation coming forward by the Republicans on, you know, introducing state waivers, giving funds, you know, as Lindsey Graham and Dr. Bill Cassidy have wanted, transferring funds to the state so they can manage, you know, their own health care plans. That may happen. I don't know where it is right now. But certainly in a state like California that is really pushing for single payer health care, they're looking to expand single payer and get to it sooner rather than later. And we're seeing in Washington State, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, all of these states now have projects underway to look at the idea of how to get universal coverage, single payer Medicare for all, as soon as possible. And Bernie Sanders, of course, is a huge proponent of this. And now Keith Ellison, who's head of the House Medicare for All. So this is very worrying. But the unfortunate thing is, as I said earlier, the Republicans had promised to repeal and replace Obamacare. It's too bad they weren't able to get together, come up with a plan, and get it done, because now we're in this very tenuous situation with what is going to happen in the future.
Exactly. And I kind of wonder, since you follow this so closely, Mitt Romney had tried in so many ways to dissociate himself from the plan that he had put in place when he was governor of Massachusetts. And I wonder, is that plan or is that program no longer in effect? Is it something that went away as a result of the national health care, the Affordable Care Act, or is it succeeding, failing? Can you give us a sense of, because that was considered to be the template for the Affordable Care Act, correct?
Right. And you know, I was very disappointed when Governor Romney was running for president that he didn't say, okay, we tried it in Massachusetts and it didn't work. You know, premiums went up. People were not fully covered. And therefore, this is not a plan for the rest of the country. I think that he might have done better in that election against President Obama in 2012 than he actually did. One of the plans that's come out from some of the people that sort of a bipartisan group, I can't think of the chap's name. Oh, Mark McClellan and a group. It's a former Andy Slavitt, the former head administrator of CMS. He's come up with what he thinks is a bipartisan deal, and he said, "I do support single payer in the long run, but in the meantime, my goal would be to get a Romney Care kind of plan for the country," which worries me a great deal as well, because I know that he was one of the architects of Obamacare. So I think we want to stay away from Romney Care because the idea proved to be expensive and, you know, is not working. They also, in Massachusetts, under Romney Care, have the individual mandate. And I was very pleased that, you know, under the tax reform bill of the end of last year, that our individual mandate under Obamacare was repealed. It won't go into effect until January 1st next year. But as I say, Massachusetts has an individual mandate. California is now looking at an individual mandate of its own. They'd have to go to the feds to, you know, make this happen and get a two-thirds majority. But I'm hoping that this is not the future, because that would be a stepping stone to single payer. And I think President Obama, when he was president, his whole goal with Obamacare was he knew it wasn't going to work, and therefore that would be then the next step is Medicare for All, the government mm-hmm. taking over fully our healthcare system.
Do you see anything that stops that from happening?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, when people go to the polls, that they realize that a Canadian-style system, which under Sanders and many of these plans are even more comprehensive than the Canadian single-payer plan, where all private insurance is outlawed, but they don't cover dental care, they don't cover vision care, they don't cover prescription drugs. And so, you know, my new book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare, which just came out last week, I mean, I'm really trying to educate Americans on why care would be rationed, why, you know, long waiting lists would prevail, and people, the American people, would be very upset by this. And of course, it's not free. Canadians pay on average $12,500 a year in taxes to pay for a system where they have to wait over 5 months from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist. We need to open up the healthcare market, give many different types of options for people, and that way we will get affordable, accessible, quality care for all, not letting the government take it over.
Well, we will see what happens between now and November. Sally, right. Thank you for joining us on POTUS today.
Thank you, Tim. Take care.
Sally Pipes, president of the Pacific Research Institute, obviously somebody who does not like the idea of the Affordable Care Act and especially morphing into single payer. She is tweeting at Sally Pipes, P-I-P-E-S.